welcome to another episode of Sitting Around Talking Pictures. We're talking about the Magnificent Seven this week. We're talking about GOAT. What's GOAT? Stay tuned and find out. We're talking about a movie called...
Good Tease.
What's that? Oh, what a tease. Am I teasing this stuff great? My Blind Brother with Adam Scott, Nick Kroll, and Jenny Slate. And we're talking about Free State of Jones with Matthew McConaughey. I am joined, as always, by the one and only, the inimitable Bill Bregoli.
Hi.
Oi. He was not Jewish, and he says, oi, Bill McCuddy.
All right.
And Logan Hill's joining us, our friend from Rolling Stone magazine.
Catchphrase.
Now, this is an after show, as you know.
Insert catchphrase here.
Insert catchphrase.
To Talking Pictures, a TV show that we do on New York One every week, which airs locally, as I said, on New York One and nationally on Time Warner Cable. You know, Logan, I was thinking about this. You've been doing that TV show, I think 15 years since
it's
that thing started.
It's been a long time. I was trying to figure out how long that had been.
I mean, you're one of the original... I mean, literally, it was like you and Leah Rosen from People Magazine and Thelma Adams.
Thelma.
I mean, it was... Yeah, you were like 15 years ago when it was called Everyone's a Critic. That was the podcast.
Oh, I don't think I was even on that.
It was before we created Vulture. I remember because we started doing a lot more once we created Vulture at New York Magazine, and that was 2006. But I'd been doing the show before then. So who knows?
It's like amazing.
Yeah. What's the big article you're working on for the next issue of Rolling Stone?
Big article. Not one for Rolling Stone, but I've got this one coming out in Wired soon. I'm being edited by Barack Obama. We got Barack to be our
good
guest
to see he could
editor.
Get a job after. Lord, so this is
yeah, he's making the transition.
I like
your, he hears media is really blowing up. It's like a growth industry.
This paragraph over here.
they're doing a big issue on
that. Is a great Jackie
innovation.
Mason. That was.
It's not fault. If you just change the inflection a little bit, you get Jackie Mason. That's what do we do here, Bill McCuddy?
We watch the bad movies, so you don't have to.
That's right, we do. And we saw The Magnificent Seven, which is not a bad movie.
No, I liked
it
a lot.
You know, Magnificent Seven, I guess even 46 years, I guess you could do a remake. You know, sometimes they do a remake after like 2-3 years.
Right.
I've seen that, you know. But Magnificent Seven is a... You know, remake of the 1960 John Sturges film, which starred Yul Brynner and Steve McQueen and Charles Bronson and James Coburn, which itself was a remake of a Japanese film called The Seven Samurai, or Seven Samurai, with directed by the legendary director Akira Kurosawa. And
turns out there are like two more versions also.
There's the Return of the Magnificent Seven, and then there's they have sequels to them that kind of...
Vincent Pastore, big pussy from The Sopranos last night, was talking to me after the premiere, and he's like, I've seen them all, and this isn't really a remake, Bill. This is different. They always tell the story a little differently.
Well, the story...
And they did tell the story a little differently.
The story is that Seven... That there's this town that's being terrorized by these bad guys. They want to take over the town, and they get all their money together, and they hire, in this case, Denzel Washington, who gets seven outlaws, you know, gunmen, to kind of defend the town.
Kind of like the Village People. I mean, there's like one from every category.
It is like the Village People. There's an Indian. There's a cop. You know,
this film needed more dance numbers.
There's
really.
A fire. Did anybody put a fire? There's a fireman in there. So you have Denzel Washington, and some of the people that he enlists are Ethan Hawke and Vincent D'Onofrio and Chris Pratt. And the villain here in the 1960s version, the villain were these Mexican banditos headed by Eli Wallach.
Right.
But this one, they made it kind of like a 21st century problem.
I was stunned.
Well, it's a ruthless capitalist industrialist guy who, wants to take over. It's a mining town, and he wants to take over the town to strip them of their, all the precious metal that's in the ground. Yeah. And, you know, just for kicks, he burns down. I mean, they make you hate this guy. He's like twirling mustache.
Oh, yeah. Snidely Whiplash.
Yeah. If Peter Sarsgaard had a mustache, he'd be going.
Right, but he comes out, he's like, let's burn down the church for no apparent reason at all, just to show you that I'm a prick. You know what I mean?
And the stakes very clear.
Yeah, and he kills this guy who goes, why did you burn down a boom? He just kills the husband. They're just that they have a baby. Yeah, so
which sets up a strong female part, the woman who hires them.
I think his Peter Sarsgaard. It's a little over the top as written.
The only thing less far over the top is Vincent D'Onofrio's role.
Yeah, what
and
the hell
this
is that?
The
all
same
about?
Film.
Walter Brennan on acid.
Oh my god!
What was Vincent D'Onofrio? He's gained like about 150 pounds.
Except he was there last night and he hasn't. So either they padded him or he's lost. lost the weight since, because we were at the premiere, I should point out.
Vincent D'Onofrio has this hype. I mean, if you know him from Law & Order, was it Criminal Intent? One of the Law & Orders.
So.
And certainly from the Stanley Kubrick movie, Full Metal Jacket, where he plays Private... Is he Private Joker or is...
No, that's Modine.
Right,
so
but he's the guy that gets picked on. And, right. You know, he adopts this voice... Which sounds like this in the well, we gotta catch. I don't like. What are you doing?
I can't
there?
Even tell what he's going for, but it's great. It's fun.
You know, a lot of the dialogue. I wanted to bring this up on the show. I can't wait for it to come out on demand because I want to watch it with subtitles. I really didn't understand about 30%.
Bill and I saw it at the. It's called the special screening. It was the New York premiere, and we saw it at the MoMA, the Museum of Modern Art. I think the sound in there is pretty awful. Now I don't know if it's because we were sitting all the way on the right hand side where you don't get the full dynamic.
Makes me sit with
Dolby
him.
Stereo
torture.
Effect, but I found the sound to be muffled.
Yeah, it was.
I don't
muffled,
know if that's
muffled.
A point.
But also the accents. Everybody's doing a different
well,
accent,
you saw
and they're
in
just
a,
really
in a regular screening.
Yeah,
you
I could
find
hear.
It
I could hear.
If,
I just couldn't make out what D'Onofrio was ever saying. I was mainly because I was laughing too hard. I couldn't hear over my own.
Do you
laughter.
Remember how cut he was in? Adventures in
yes,
Babysitting.
Yes, Adventures in Babysitting.
Nobody remembers
locks.
That he was the guy that shows up with the tow truck and is like, looks like Mr. Universe. It's
he
like an unbelievable
well,
transformation.
Vincent D'Onofrio apparently was very, even though his big starring, where he first came to audiences' attention, was in that Stanley Kubrick movie, apparently he gained a lot of weight for that movie and got typecast, and he said he couldn't find work for a long time because everybody... You know, anything that was being offered to him.
Didn't he play Orson Welles once, like on HBO
well,
or something?
He looked like Orson Welles in Magnificent Seven last night.
Yeah, and in Daredevil, where he plays the big bad guy.
Did he
in season
play
one.
Orson Welles?
Yeah, I think in an HBO thing.
That's
or something.
Liev Schreiber played Orson Welles.
No, I know,
Orson
but I, there, that was RKO 281 or whatever.
Right,
but there
yeah,
was another
yeah, yeah.
Orson Welles movie that I think he
Do
was
you know
the guy.
Rigoli?
But
it was me. What was it? Me and Orson. But
yeah, maybe yeah.
Maybe
I don't
me
know,
and Orson. I think is it, wasn't that a documentary by the guy who did.
No, it's about the relationship with the kid that was working for him and
Zac Efron.
Yeah.
Well, anyway.
So
it's interesting that you make the villain a greedy industrialist. That's
well,
your
it's
villain.
Updating it.
Here's the problem I had with it. First of all, it's a fun. You seem McCuddy to enjoy it infinitely more than I did. I mean, you kept sitting, turning to me, going, "This is great. This is great. I love
it." Got
this.
A lot
this
of applause
great.
At the end, which wasn't necessary. And
Anton Fuqua, the director, was sitting in the audience, so they,
it's very violent. It's a much more violent version.
Well, it's more like
he
a
got
Sam
on stage
Peckinpah
and
violent.
He
movie.
Said something very funny. He goes, "My mom's here." Everyone in my family loves, all the women in my family love really violent movies.
Did you think Logan and Bregoli that it had more of a Sam Peckinpah vibe of violence to it?
I just think all movies do now. I think Peckinpah changed the way we shoot violence. There's always more blood and more like gruesome violence than there was before. I think it's just like the new way we shoot films. The thing that I thought was interesting was how fun the movie was that they played up the comedy. And it reminds you that it wasn't just that Seven Samurai inspired Magnificent Seven. It's that all those movies gave way to films like Star Trek or The Avengers is the most obvious one, right?
Uh-huh.
Like this team of heroes all kind of bonding together to fight.
Right.
Like there's something about this template that we've seen a million times before. So I didn't feel like there was a big pressure on this remake.
But that makes it kind of cool to go old school and go back to. I can't predict that this is the rebirth of the Western, but I think this is going to make a lot of money. A lot of people have been talking about it maybe not doing well, but I think
it's
going to make
do well. I think Westerns just don't do well anymore. What do you think, Bregoli? I mean, even though, first of all, what do you think of the movie, Bill?
I hope that somewhere in the gag reel, there's a shot of Denzel Washington getting off his horse, looking into the crowd and going, "Excuse me while I whip this out."
Oh, you think it's Blazing Saddles?
I hope he had a little fun with it.
I thought of that character from Blazing Saddles, the Cleavon Little character from Blazing Saddles also. Periodically. I also thought when people hide underneath the floorboards, at one particular point, I was thinking of Inglourious Basterds, the opening scene in that. You know, I don't know if you thought of that scene when they're all hiding, and you figure they're going to shoot underneath the floorboard.
No, but I did think that they were going to burn down a bunch of kids, and I thought, boy, this is really going over the top now.
The problem, first of all, it's an for what it is, it's an enjoyable movie, but I don't think it has the... In the 1960 version, okay, they all kind of, you know...
First of all, nobody going to it today is going to compare it to that at all.
I know.
Most people... We have an intern visiting us today.
Her name is Nicole.
Hello.
And we said...
Hello, everybody.
Have you ever heard of The Magnificent Seven, the original? Have you ever seen it?
No.
See?
Never even heard of it?
No.
See, nobody, that's everybody in America.
Okay, well, I'm just, okay, but we have seen it. And right. I'm just saying that in the original, there was a more of a nobility of purpose to why these guys, other than getting the payday, they did it for a higher cause, for like, you know, it's the right thing to do. We must save the villagers. And although they say it in this movie and you see it, I wasn't feeling it, you know? And I think most people in this century that we're in right now don't really care because, as you say, Logan, you know, it's just people are used to watching movies just loaded up with action. And yeah. Look, as far as the action goes, it was refreshing for me not to see action that was car chases. You know, at least it was like
gunfight
at the OK Corral shootouts with the and what was that old-fashioned machine?
They had something like Gatling gun. Yeah. Yeah. They go old school.
And but the chase scene involved one horsepower vehicles.
Well, there's a shot when Sarsgaard, and you and I both went, oh, man, when Sarsgaard wants to retaliate and sends in his forces and there's, like, hundreds of horses. Right. That was kind of cool, you know what I mean? But I don't know.
We should say we have a little conversation with, but we don't have to play it now. We can tease that. But we spoke with Denzel.
Bill Begoli did.
No, yeah. Got my soundbite.
Okay.
Actually, he was asked how he got into character as this. What was his character's name? Was it Chisholm or something?
Yeah, Sam Chisholm.
Sam Chisholm. From Wichita.
Right. Explains the accent, I guess. But he was asked how he got into character.
Started with a horse, get out there with my guns, and walk around. Walk the earth with my horse and see what it feels like. To be alone, you know, to be, who do you talk to? Do you start answering your own questions? Do you talk to the horse? Does the horse talk back? You know, it's like, you know, here we are.
I'm glad to see that here that Denzel did a lot of preparation for the role. That's
just get on a horse. And then also talk to Haley Bennett, the young lady. She was in The Equalizer. She was kind of awesome in that. And she looks great in this. And she got the old softball question, what can people expect?
It's a Western, but I feel like it's like a Western adventure film. It's dramatic at times, it's comedic at times, it makes you feel good, it'll make you cry, it takes you on a ride. And I think that the best movies do that.
See, she's right. Crowds are going to come to this, and it's a well-oiled Gatling gun machine. I think it's a great film.
Would you recommend it, Begoli?
I would, actually, yeah. I think my dad would love it.
And what about you, Logan?
Yeah, I think it's fun. I mean, this film is not deep, but it's a blast. And I do think that the thing that it adds is humor, right? Like Ethan Hawke's character is really funny. He's basically doing these like ridiculous made up monologues that go nowhere usually, but are each really funny. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, he's got like PTSD or something like that in them. He's shell shocked from. Can't pull the trigger.
But which is weird, right? Like, he both has PTSD and this motor mouth, and the two don't really seem to, like, ever collide. He's playing two different characters depending on the scene, which is fine for me still. Like, you know, and I
plus, you know,
like,
he's going to be okay. Yeah. You know,
right.
You know,
right,
he's
going to
be fine.
And Pratt's great.
Bill.
Yeah.
Seven Samurai, the original Magnificent Seven with Yul Brynner and Steve McQueen and James Coburn. This movie, what's the best of the three?
Seven Samurai.
Yeah, without doubt.
Yeah.
Seven
Samurai. A question.
Yeah.
Sure.
Well, you know,
I think that, like, just because this, you know, we have that thing where we're always like, oh, this is a remake, so clearly the original was better. The original Magnificent Seven, I think, was a good movie. Right? It was a good movie. It was a crowd pleaser.
How do you like
it?
How
wasn't
they
the deepest Western.
Yeah, I mean, you keep reading all this Zen bullshit into it about how they were on a higher plane and everything, and I think it's the same movie. It's the same. I'll bet in 1960 people had the exact same reaction that they're going to have.
You know,
to this
the
one.
Movie didn't do well. When it was first released here in 1960, it did really well internationally and then became a favorite of people later on. When it first was released, it did not do that well.
And I guess we should also mention, too, that Yul Brynner was really pissed off by Steve McQueen. This is one of Steve McQueen's first big movies.
Right. Well,
and McQueen
really
would do all this business in the film, like shake the cartridges before he loaded the gun. And I talked to a screenwriter who's has written a lot of war movies. He's like, McQueen was doing all this authentic, cool stuff, and he was getting these tips, I guess, from somebody on the set who was telling him what to do, and it was driving Brynner crazy. They counted the number of lines. You couldn't have more. It was all of that. And at one point, didn't you say
this director set up a shot, and Steve McQueen said something like, if I stand here, it'd be good. And the director goes, yeah, that's fine. And what Brennan didn't realize until he looked at the dailies, you know, afterwards, is there was a slight incline, like little hill where he was standing on. So McQueen dominates the scene. It's like like Brenner looks, you know, like, you know,
like being
know,
on the Letterman show when Dave was like
5 feet tall, and it's, right. It's just like, yes, he did all the, but McQueen was nobody really when he did the film. You know, all, actually, except for Yul Brynner, Coburn, Bronson, and McQueen were relatively unknown. They became much.
Robert
famous.
Vaughn was
Robert
not
Vaughn
anyone
also
there?
Relatively nobody, unknown. The yeah. Man from U.N.C.L.E. is what yeah. is. The thing that made him really famous, but he was kind of unknown.
And I think the, when you're talking about box office, I think that's going to be interesting to watch, is that this film, I agree that the Western just doesn't play in the States. I feel like we're burned out. We've seen too many. It feels like an old thing, and younger people go see movies in the theater. But then internationally, the problem with a lot of movies is you only have one star, and this film's got so many stars. You got seven of them, you know, like, yeah. and you've got an international cast, and I think that's going to help this film abroad. It could end up doing well abroad, where like there is a hunger for American Westerns.
Did you like Chris Pratt in the film? And
yes.
Do you think he stole it the way McQueen stole it away from Yul Brynner? Because it's the same.
No, nobody steals a movie from Denzel Washington, directed by Antoine Fuqua.
I love
no
it.
Way.
I love it. Denzel was great. But do you think that a lot of these movies, which are lower on dialogue than they were, let's say, in 1960... Do you think that's because an international audience, the dialogue just doesn't play, and it's just an international audience which comprises so much of the box office? You know, it's just loaded up with action and, you know.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, explosions don't need subtitles, right? Like, that's the key. And I think that, you know, whether it's car movies, space movies, you know, I mean, you go down the list, monsters and superheroes, like, these things don't need, you need like a catchphrase that you translate. You know, maybe like mine, but that's it. So yeah, I don't. But this film, I didn't think of this film as I was watching as being just action. I mean, definitely the last half is, but it's maybe talkier than some of these action movies that come out. I mean, Hawk's character, Sarsgaard's character, but you know, there's a lot of monologuing. Everybody gets to showboat a little bit.
A little bit, yeah. Although I think, you know, right from the first scene in the bar where he starts shooting them up, you know, and then they burn the church. And I don't want to give too much away, but there's seven of them, spoiler alert, but anyway, it's,
right, it's the same thing, who's gonna live, who's gonna die, yeah. You know, and
I was surprised at that body count at the end. That's all I'm gonna say.
All right, let's move on. So there's a bunch of movies that are on demand on DVD. They're coming out this week. One of them is called Goat. Logan, tell us about Goat.
You know, Goat is it's a surprisingly smart, well-crafted indie film about fraternity hazing on a college campus. It's based on the 2004 memoir by Brad Land. The film stars a young kid who's in the terrible movie Warcraft, but is much better in this, Ben Schnester. And he co-stars opposite Nick Jonas, who plays his older brother. So he's the freshman who's pledging the frat. His brother's already been there. And the younger brother kind of has to prove to the frat and to his older brother that he's kind of worth, that he deserves to be there.
For one reason, that there's a horrific thing that happens at the beginning of the movie to the younger brother.
Well, you give that at the beginning of the movie.
Yeah, no.
The younger brother gets
the shit kicked out
nothing,
of him.
Nothing to do with hazing. He picks up these two guys that want to ride. And he's leaving a party, and he thinks these guys are at the party, and they...
And then his manhood is at question. Everybody in the fraternity
PTSD after that. So and that's the whole thing when all these hazing things.
Right.
He's trying, you know.
And these fraternity brothers seem to know about it, and they're pretending to be sympathetic, but mostly are like, maybe this guy doesn't have what it takes to get into this thing. Mm-hmm. So I just was really impressed with it. And I'll tell you, the most impressive thing about it, I think, is Nick Jonas. I mean, yeah. I never thought of him as a great actor.
I think the performances by, first of all, I think this Ben Schnetzer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I think he's great. I think he's got charisma. I think he turns in this emotionally sensitive performance, and he's a really good looking kid. And I think he's going, as I said in the TV show today, he's going places. Keep your eye on him.
One thing I liked about, like,
I think Nick Jonas was a real, who the hell would think Nick from the Jonas Brothers that
Nick Jonas has been, he's been acting quite a bit. Yeah, and he did that, there's a TV series where, I can't remember, it's a martial arts TV series. He's been playing an MMA fighter. And in that, he's supposed to play this, you know, kind of much more macho, tough character than his character here, who's macho and very masculine, but still like vulnerable and naive and confused. And it's nice to see him playing all that. He does feel like a young kid who's trying to like act big, and I think he's good at that. So
yeah, this was a surprise, and I recommend it. Neil?
Well, you know, other than the acting, which I really liked, I found that the movie, It was one big torture session. I mean, first of all, I've seen other hazing fraternity movies where I've seen these horrible. I mean, maybe it's a little more graphic.
With a
than
goat?
This one. No, not with a goat. But I've seen. We've seen all seen other films where they have these.
If
horrible,
you can see only one goat hazing movie this year, make
you know,
it goat.
I mean, the whole thing was like a torture session. I mean, first he's assaulted, and you see him brutally being beaten up. Then there are all these horrible hazing rituals where they're being, you know, one kid's locked in a cage. You know, they're all being, you know, So I thought, and then it just kind of ends. The movie just kind of ends abruptly. And I thought there was, you know, what's the point? I kind of felt ripped off at the end of the whole thing. But the performances are good, but I don't think that it...
It played very realistically
to me. I don't think
that
it's worth the price of a rental, but it's okay. I mean, it's all right. I look forward to more Ben Schnetzer movies. I recommend it.
Yeah, I mean... And
I do, too.
It's interesting when you look at the credits, the production credits stuff for this film. It's produced by Killer Films, which is here in New York.
And James Franco took me out of the movie. Yeah. James Franco is one of the producers of the movie. Comes into the movie for like 5 minutes. And he's not bad in the movie, but all
he's
of a sudden...
He's great.
Like,
he's like Alec Baldwin in Glenn Ross. He's like... He's perfect. He comes in as an old frat guy that they worship. And I thought that was great. I thought he was really good.
I went to college in North Carolina where like the frat culture was just dominant. You know, University of North Carolina. And... You know,
were you in a fraternity?
No, I wasn't. I hated.
Was anybody here in a fraternity?
No.
Nobody.
Yeah,
would...
I might as well say I was.
You were in a sorority?
Yeah.
Okay.
On a volleyball team is like a sorority.
So do you go through any hazing rituals, Nicole, the intern?
Of course. I mean, little things. Of course, like freshmen coming in, we always have to do everything. Every single thing.
But in this movie, I mean, they're subjected. In this movie, they're really subjected to some horrible things. I mean, were you had to like. Is there anything horrible that you mean?
Describe it to us.
Oh my God. Literally, we just had to help the seniors move their stuff into their dorms.
Oh, that's lame.
We always had to carry all the equipment to all the games. Mm-hmm. Every single thing. Right. We had to bring out the water bottles, set up practice all by ourselves, set up the net while the seniors just sit down and do nothing and yell at us.
Was it worth it?
Yes, it was, but I'm glad it's over.
Well, carrying equipment in this movie is nothing compared to what these people...
No.
They carry emotional baggage in
this
movie.
All right, let's move on. All right, here's a movie
in
I really
a world.
Like. It's a small indie movie. It's funny. It's called My Blind Brother. And it's about two brothers, one played by Nick Kroll and one played by Adam Scott. Adam Scott is the blind brother. Nick Kroll is sort of his... How would you describe it? His
his guilty. You know, he's the brother who, you know, there was an accident caused by the older brother, and so he feels guilt, and he's kind of trapped by that guilt, and he's just kind of working at a terrible job that he hates, and he's just grumpy and fun, but he's funny. You know, he's sort of basically your like stoner brother.
He's his seeing eye dog. Basically his seeing eye brother.
Yeah,
his brother is how would you describe it?
Charismatic and better looking, sorry, Nick Kroll, and just like gets all the attention from the parents and is on local television because they have, you know, they sponsor runs and swims and all these things that he raises money for this group of people. It could have gone horribly wrong in terms of making fun of a group of people who, and there are, you can tell some legitimately blind people in the film who are extras. I think it's very clever. And I love Jenny Slate.
First of all, I like all three.
She's the new indie queen for me.
As you mentioned on the TV show, all three of these guys, the two guys and Jenny Slate, they're great indie actors.
Yeah, I feel like Nick Kroll, I've always loved his sketch comedy, and now he's turning out to be like a great dramatic actor. Like, he's actually really kind of soulful in some of these scenes, and he's great
sweet.
In this new movie, Loving, that's coming out this fall. He's terrific
He's
in
sweet
it.
In this movie, and you kind of empathize with this hapless character that he's playing. And you can't help but root for this guy. And he has great chemistry with Jenny Slate. And she's terrific. I mean, there's a scene where... I'm not giving anything away in the movie. In the beginning of the movie, Jenny Slate and Nick Kroll have, like, this one-night stand. And then Jenny Slate, the premise of the movie, is she winds up dating the blind brother. And... But you really see that the more perfect fit is with Nick Kroll and Jenny Slate, but neither one of them wants to hurt the Adam Scott, who's kind of a prick. I mean, despite the
kind of a prick, he's great.
Yeah, absolutely.
Adam Scott is always great, you know, whatever he does, all the way back to, I loved him in playing the prick in Step Brothers with Catherine Hahn And I think Jenny Slate is just adorable. My wife kept going, she's so adorable. She's just so adorable. I mean, she puts her underwear...
I miss her on Saturday Night Live.
She puts her underwear on backwards after the one night stand. She's like...
She was great on SNL.
They don't go this way.
She should have been on SNL longer.
Yeah, she was great. Well, what's that movie that she did where she...
Obvious Child.
Obvious Child. Yeah. She's terrific in that.
Yeah, isn't that becoming a television series?
Yeah.
I think, yeah.
And is she in it?
I'm not sure.
I think so.
Oh,
I think
well,
she'd
anyway,
be the obvious choice.
So this first-time director, Sophie Goodhart, who directed this movie, there are so many rom-com pitfalls that you could fall into when you do this, and I found that she avoided that. I mean, I watching this, she avoided the sophomoric humor.
And, nope, she didn't.
Really? No. I thought it was believable and warm, I enjoyed the whole movie.
Like, no. Yeah, there's something. I felt this film was really likable, and I wasn't upset that I spent my time watching this movie because this cast is so great. But it looked pretty terrible. I mean, it looked like a very boring, like TV looking indie
you
shot.
You like the way it was shot.
It was shot.
It was not
poorly.
Shot well. I agree with you.
I mean, part of that's a low budget, sure. But then also, the pace slows down really badly in certain sections, and then some of the jokes I just felt were thin and didn't go anywhere. Like, this film felt like it was like a couple rewrites away from being much sharper, but even so, it's such a small little story. This film was never going to be a big hit movie, but it is a nice showcase for these people.
I recommend it. Bill McCuddy?
Yeah, I'd say see it.
You say pass. I'd like to ask Nicole the intern, have you heard of any of the actors we were just talking about?
No.
Nick Kroll, Adam Scott, or Jenny Slate?
No.
No. Right. You know Denzel?
I do.
You know Chris Pratt?
And I will see that movie just because Denzel is in it.
And you know Chris Pratt?
No.
Have Vincent D'Onofrio?
No.
Wow. Okay. I don't want to embarrass you, but... What's that? Millennials. Yeah. Millennials indeed.
Stardom's
changing. All right. Last movie of the day. Free State of Jones. Take it away, Bill McCuddy.
Well, all right. Matthew McConaughey is a Southern farmer during the Civil War who's... fighting his own battle besides the Civil War.
It's a true story.
Yeah, it's based on a true story about a guy. Although I want to do some more research on this. I have a sneaking suspicion that his reign as the guy who was king of the swamp didn't last nearly as long as the movie wants us to believe. But he's holed up with some slaves and other farmers, and they're wreaking a little havoc because they're tired of... They want to stick it to the man. This is a real 1%, 99% kind of a subject matter. And it's too long. It's 2 hours and 20 minutes long. It plays like a history lesson. You can tell Gary Ross, the writer-director, thought maybe this was going to be an Oscar contender because it's timely. It deals with racism. It deals with topics that are sort of pushing buttons right now. But it's a little too preachy. It's way too long. A lot of the movie happens in type on the screen where it tells you what's happening and what happened and setting stage for
95
us.
Years later.
That
used literally.
This is that kind of film where the guy just seems, and clearly they consulted with this murderer's row of amazing American historians, people like Eric Foner, who's a terrific historian of the Reconstruction era. And the Reconstruction is a period we haven't seen on screen a lot. But he feels like, well, I'm making that movie, so I've got to cram it all into this one film.
Right.
And so that's why, on the show we were talking about, it's jumping around timelines, it's cramming in little side stories and details, not because they made any dramatic sense with the characters you've got on screen, but because, oh, we don't want to miss that element, we don't want to miss that part of it, or this economic implication.
Right.
And then by that point, you just feel like, show me, I'd rather watch the documentary.
Gary Ross directed and wrote Seabiscuit, and he also wrote one
Good
of my
training.
Favorite movies, Big, the Tom Hanks, the Robert Loggia movie.
Another perfect transition to this material.
But he's a good storyteller. And I think for two-thirds of this movie, it's a very good story. But then, as you both said, I mean, all of a sudden we're cramming, 100 years of history into the last half an hour, 40 minutes of the movie. We're going through Reconstruction. We're going through, and literally, 95 years ahead, where one of the descendants of this main character, played by Matthew McConaughey, Newton Knight, he's on trial for...
Mississippi for marrying a white woman.
Where this guy has 1/8 African-American blood in him. And, I mean, all of these are worthy of stories, but, I mean, they're all just slighted because it's just crammed through. What do you think, Bregoli?
Exactly that. There was a lot. And actually, the flashbacks really kind of jolted me, and I was like, get rid of them.
Which
flash? Flash forward.
Yeah, they're terrible. And there's a great film about interracial marriage this fall. Like, Loving is going to be in the Oscar conversation. It's going to be a major film this fall. It's absolutely phenomenal.
Did you see that at Toronto?
Yeah. And I wrote about the actress Ruth Negga, who's going to be, nominated for an Oscar. Yeah, I've seen Birth of a Nation as well.
And what do you think?
The Nate Parker film. It's a really angry, interesting movie. It's a first film. It's a little rough around the edges. Apparently, Fox Searchlight has kind of cleaned it up in an edit, added some special effects to smooth out some of the stuff that I saw at Sundance. But now, you know, it's just been so swamped by everything going on with Nate Parker's history.
Yeah, I know.
And
so is it not going to win the best? Well, if you get away from everything, just look at it strictly as a movie. Is it an Academy Award Best Picture kind of film?
I didn't think so when I saw it the first time, before this all blew up. But I did think it was an exciting film that might make some noise at the box office. I mean, you know, it's such a, you know, like there's never been a bad time for a film about race in America, but right now Black Lives Matter and everything bubbling up, this is a great time for a film that's a little bit angry, you know?
That's
and
why made it was $17 million that they paid for, a record amount.
And $17 million to buy the film?
Yeah.
So Logan, if you were picking four or five movies right now off the top of your head that are going to be the movies that are going to be Oscar contenders for Best Picture, what do you think they would be? Or give me one.
And did you see any of them at Toronto?
I didn't go to Toronto this year. I mean, I've been watching press screenings.
I think that Casey Affleck movie before. Is probably going to be in there.
Manchester by the Sea is phenomenal. Yeah, I think that's a Best Picture lock.
You think that's going to win Best Picture?
No, I mean, it'll be nominated.
Do you think
Casey
Affleck is going to be a lock for a nomination for Best Picture?
I don't know that people love Casey Affleck enough for him to be a lock. Yeah, I think that he's kind of never played the game. He's never been very friendly with people in Hollywood. He personally can be a little tough to deal with sometimes. So I think that, yeah, we'll see.
So
I mean,
Manchester
but it's a great performance.
Sea,
but Manchester by the Sea is terrific.
Fences?
Screenplay, director,
best,
picture.
Well, nobody's seen Fences
Nobody's seen Fences yet.
So it's just a guess.
I've seen the play. I saw it on with James Earl Jones on Broadway, the August Wilson play.
I saw
stand corrected.
Screening.
Some people have seen the play.
No, I mean, I know the story. It's really worth it. I'm looking forward to the movie. Well, for example, The Humans won the Tony this year for best play on Broadway, and it also, I believe, won the Pulitzer, and I thought it sucked. Okay, so I'm not telling you the Fences is a really
good. No, it's good. August
Fences
Wilson
is really
solid
good,
stuff.
You know?
Yeah.
I would have rather they did Two Trains Running. I think that's the better August Wilson play on those seven plays or whatever that he did, but I like Fences. Fences is good. I'm looking forward
to it. By the way, at this point, we'd like to thank the four people that are still listening to this podcast.
All right. Well, anyway, Bill Bregoli, would you recommend Free State of Jones?
It just is a rental or something. That's about it.
So it's an on-demand rental. Would you rent it on demand? It looks great. Shot beautifully.
Yeah, I
watched
it
on Blu-ray, man. It's like that thing pops on Blu-ray. You know?
Yeah, and if there's a way to fast forward to those certain scenes, you could do it.
What about you, Logan?
No. There's just plenty better films to watch.
If you love McConaughey, he's pretty good.
All right. So next week we're going to be talking about Deepwater Horizon. And that is about the BP oil spill with the hole that they couldn't plug up. And we're also going to be talking about Bill and Mike, Mike and Dave need wedding dates.
We're
going to be doing that one. And we're going to be doing a documentary, Wiener, on Anthony Wiener, which will be kind of interesting. So you don't want to miss that one. So for Nicole the intern,
you have some homework to do, right?
There you go. For Logan Hill from Rolling Stone.
Thank you.
For Bill Bregoli, our indubitable, is that a word?
Yeah, that sounds good.
Cast member.
And I'm the doubtable Bill McCuddy.
And Bill McCuddy. I'm Neil Rosen, and thanks for sitting around talking pictures. We'll sit around talking pictures with you next time.